Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. There is much evidence of St. Louis history we can see in the downtown and near downtown areas that influenced their time and beyond. The old courthouse, the riverfront, the old cathedral. The cathedral, that is. But there is much that we can't see that had a huge impact on the city then and since. You can't see a 19th century cholera epidemic, a horrendous 1849 riverfront fire, a devastating cyclone. The bus and walking tour company Renegade STL offers a variety of tours, including the latest, the Disasters and Catastrophe Tour. Joining me to explain are Amanda Clark, the founder and tour guide with Renegade STL. Adriana Peroni is an architect and Renegade STL tour guide. Thank you so much for being with us once again.
Thanks for having us. Thank you.
It wasn't too long ago that you were here. At that point, we were talking, Amanda, about the whole damn city tour, which is something quite different from what we're talking about today.
Yes and no. And every, you know, the whole damn city was about seeing the pieces that are unseen to the normal tourist. But the disasters and catastrophes kind of grew from that, because on every single one of those tours, people asked about people are always asking, do you know about the fire? Do you know about the cholera? Do you know about these things? So it kind of grew out of that. And so we're actually doing this as a whole damn city tour, disasters and catastrophes.
Adriana, how can you show people something that's not there?
There's a lot to be said about the gaps that are left behind. And you might just see an empty field, but we're going to tell you why it is an empty field today. Not only that, we can show you things that the buildings that have been rebuilt are built differently because of the things that happened. We learned a lot from those things. Something like cholera, it's more of a story, but something like a fire, there's very tangible things that we can show you in every building you're in today, and particularly in some of the more notable buildings in the city that are based off of things we learned in these disasters.
How long a tour is it, Amanda, and how widespread are the sites that you visit?
Every tour is always 2 hours, whether we're walking or bus tour. The walking tour visits goes all over downtown, from City Garden down to the riverfront. We actually walk out on the Eads Bridge for the first time in any of our tours, and it's a really sweet thing to do because I'm in love with the Eads Bridge. But the bus tour goes is just at the whole damn city. We're going to be visiting. Although this time I think we'll be more Central West End because the tornadoes that have gone through there. We will be exploring some different areas, but it still goes up north because there was a lot of damage up north as well.
Well, let's kind of take a tour if we can. We can bounce back and forth on this. Let's talk about some of the things that you do point out. And Adriana, I'll start with you. What's your first stop?
One of the first stops, since we need to pass through downtown, obviously, we do talk about the 1849 fire that originated on the river with steamboats and how it spread into the city. We talk about just how quickly it moved. We talk about my favorite part is actually how they saved the old cathedral by blowing up buildings as the fire was coming so that there would be a fire break and they'd save the old cathedral. Desperate measures, people running all over the place, steamboats sinking. And we try to make it very visual and we try to make it very emotional and put that human aspect. You can read about these things in books, but we want to make sure that we get down into that deeper part. I know there's that story I was touching on. There's a little bit more to it. I won't go into it now because you can come on our tour and we'll point out more specific things on the tour.
You're learning, you're learning.
Thank you. but we also like to tie different tragedies together. Cholera was one that was existing, then kind of went away and came back, and then the fire hit. And I think we like to think about this as a timeline just of disasters, which is really exciting because one disaster and another disaster can sometimes bounce off one another and fix each other. It's a little confusing, but
and we use the word disasters and catastrophes very loosely. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's a political disaster, sometimes mm-hmm. it's a social disaster, physical disaster.
Acts of God.
I mean, we connect, you know, the deadliest fire in St. Louis history at the Missouri Athletic Club mm-hmm. to Pruitt-Igoe.
Right. Oh, you want me to tell about it? Okay. Yeah. Do you want to hear about this?
This
is
sure
kind
do.
Of interesting, right? We knew we wouldn't, especially with the next segment you have on after us, we knew we couldn't get away from talking about Pruitt-Igoe today, so might as well do it. So one of the major codes that was enforced in the city after the athletic club on Wash Ave burned down was that we needed to...
When was that, by
this
the way?
Was in 1914.
Oh, okay.
The athletic
it's not
club
related
fire.
To the Great Fire of 49.
Unrelated, no. Okay. This was... some argument as to where what started it. But the biggest issue was that the stairways were not protected from the fire, so a lot of people were trapped and were, you know, bed sheets out the window, jumping onto roofs, and all this kind of very dynamic escape that you'd see in a movie, but really happened. One thing that came out of that was the idea of a protected masonry enclosed stairwell, which now this is great. All these buildings have this. We're not going to have people dying because of a fire because they can't get down the stairs. All these years later, you fast forward to a building like the buildings in Pruitt-Igoe, where we now have to have these protected stairways. That's great. It will save people from fire, but it actually then causes another problem where you have people having to traverse these stairways, and because they're enclosed in masonry, you can't see what's in there. And there's a whole other world of problems now of who's in there and what's in there, what ideas those people have that might be hiding in there. And that created a lot of problems in that particular example, that codes can be good and bad. You have to have a delicate touch as an architect when you're doing things like that.
Well, you mentioned a delicate touch as an architect. You are an architect. And this has to be very, very handy for you when talking about some of these sites downtown.
It's hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. Some of the most horrible disasters that have happened in Chicago, New York, St. Louis, all the major metropolis cities of the turn of the century are complete predecessors to direct codes that are now written and are law and then we have to follow. Make sure your doors are unlocked in a public assembly space so that people can get out. Make sure people know how to use the handles of the doors that they need to get out of. Everything from top to bottom.
And Amanda, you're an architect buff, from what I whatever
yes,
that means.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So obviously that serves you very well in making these tours. I'd like to go back to the fire and the cholera epidemic, because as you indicated, they do go hand in hand. And my impression from what I've read about it is that the linkage is that really some of the building codes had to be changed. Some of the sewer lines were changed as a result, because that was the cause of the cholera.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. When the fire was raging, they were pretty much just taking bucket by bucket, forming a line, yeah. the horse and mule way of doing this. And you're exactly right. To fix that problem, there's new sewer lines, new sanitary lines, new storm lines that are put through the city, and poof, cholera goes away magically.
Yeah. It comes back a couple more times, but never at the, you know, that 1849 epidemic, the same year as the fire. I mean, it's like the worst year in St. Louis history. We really got a lot heaped on us.
Well, what kind of numbers are we talking about? I mean, do you know offhand how many people were killed in the epidemic, for instance?
In that particular epidemic, it was one in every 11 St. Louisans died. And that's not when we had a very high, you know, population.
Yeah.
That's somewhere in the neighborhood, I think, of 6,000 is where that lands.
She's the numbers person.
Yeah.
I'm the good story person.
So if you would extrapolate to what it might be like today or might have been like half a century later, it would be an enormous toll.
Very devastating. And it went so quickly. I mean, cholera killed you so quickly. It was a really awful way to go. And
everyone was just grasping at straws to try to figure out what was going on. You know, they thought it was the air and the smoke and the... I mean,
there was actually a month where the mayor of St. Louis banned vegetables.
Really?
Oh, maybe that's what it is, you know. Mm-hmm. And the limestone caves underneath the city, which every tour we give, someone asks us, when can we go in the caves?
Every time. Mm-hmm.
But those same caves were being used for sewer runoff, and some of them backed up, mm-hmm. and those were open pits. I mean,
I gather this is really a two-way street between you and the people who take the tours. I mean, you indicated they started asking about the fire and things like that, so you developed this particular tour. How much of that goes on, where you're getting input from the people that you're serving?
Constantly. Yeah. I mean, on a micro level, every tour that we give is a conversation more than just mm-hmm. a bunch of information. We work really hard to see how the people on the tour actually fit into this timeline. How does it affect them personally? And we're always listening for what people are asking about and see what they might want to do.
Well, and this stuff interests us to the end of time. I mean, I could read about this forever. So if it interests us that much, we're thinking we're not the only people out here that are intrigued by this kind of thing.
Are the people generally that take your tours, are they local people or tourists, or is it a pretty good blend of both?
It's majority local, actually. probably in the last year.
And local stretches out past the city limits. Yes. I mean, yeah. Metro area, Illinois, St. Charles, St. Joseph, things like that.
And we should point out, too, that you're not talking only about the downtown area. I mean, we've kind of focused on the fire, which mm-hmm. obviously is on the riverfront. By the way, the numbers I have here for the fire, I wouldn't ask you to come up with the number, Adriana, but 3 dead, mm-hmm. which isn't many. Right. Lasted for 11 hours, which is given the fact that it destroyed 430 buildings, mm-hmm. 23 steamboats destroyed in that. We forget about the fact that that was a pretty busy spot for steamboats mm-hmm. In those days. But again, getting back to my point, not everything that you're on your tours is downtown. Right. You're spread out a little bit. I know the Central West End, Soulard, places like that are part of it.
Absolutely, Soulard. There's a place south of downtown that is the site of a sewer explosion in the 1890s. We end the tour with that story, and it's a great, interesting story that's kind of been lost to history. There is no other writing about it, where a sewer exploded in the middle of the afternoon, killing a group of people because where it exploded, it was underneath a bar. And so it kills everyone in the bar, levels the building. But the man's wife that owned the bar, she sues the city of St. Louis. It goes, and the oil company that caused the fire. It goes all the way to the Missouri Supreme Court. I mean, it's a great story about, in the end, who is liable for what's in the sewer and what it does.
Well, was there a payoff to victims?
No.
Or they
no. No. No.
Sometimes times don't change very
much. Exactly. It's a great way to connect, you know, to our present situations and stories.
And what caused the sewer to explode, Adriana?
Amanda's got the better story of it. It's a very complicated mixture of at the root of it. It's mixing sanitary and storm sewers has a big role in the problem.
There had been a fire 4 days earlier, and in putting out the fire, and this was at an oil company further up the street, that oil had leaked into the sewers and
something
the
ignited
gases,
that. Yeah. Okay, spontaneous combustion kind of thing.
Something set it off.
Okay, well, we'll come back and continue our conversation in just a moment. It's already time for our first break. My guests in studio are Amanda Clark, the founder and tour guide with Renegade STL, and her cohort here is Adriana Peroni. She's an architect, but also a tour guide with Renegade STL. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Amanda Clark and Adriana Peroni. Before we talk with these ladies, let's bring in Tom calling from St. Louis. He has a question related to something we've talked about. Let's bring him in. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi. Actually, it's more comments. You know, you were talking about the cholera epidemic and the fire of 1849. There were a number of things that came about as a result of that. The use of brick really exploded, and that's why there's so much red brick all over St. Louis. Also, as a result, we had the second professional fire department in the country in the aftermath of that. Prior to that, it had been almost a protection racket run by Irish gangs who did not cooperate. The health department was incredibly empowered after that. They didn't mention that one of the results was that they drained Choteau's Pond in the aftermath of that epidemic. Also, it led to the creation of what was known as Quarantine Hospital, which was later known as Robert Koch Hospital, about 12 miles south of the city. All the riverboats coming up from the south had to stop there. And everyone on board was checked for communicable diseases. As a result, there's about 18,000 people buried in unmarked graves on the grounds down there next to Buzzin Quarry today. The health department was so empowered, it really paid off in the influenza epidemic of 1918-1919. St. Louis had one of the lowest death rates in that terrible calamity because the health department had the power to shut down theaters, saloons, even churches to slow the spread of the disease.
Tom, thank you very much for the call. Do you want a job as a tour guide? Maybe I can set you up with the ladies. You're obviously very knowledgeable about it, but that's one of the reasons they're here to talk about these things. But thank you for your input. Did Tom tell you, Amanda, anything you didn't already know?
Unfortunately, no.
But we're leaving a little bit to the imagination,
sure.
So you come on our tour.
Yeah, I mean, the tours
surprises.
Are 2 hours long. We can't cover every incident, but Tom certainly is knowledgeable about that.
Absolutely.
What about your research? How do you research these things?
Every way possible. Library, a lot of Googling, a lot of stories. You know, we talk to people that we can reach out to. We have people on staff that are in the history department, you know, American Studies program at SLU. She helped, you know, is really great at researching and has access to things that can help us really get dive deep. And
our amazing intern, Elizabeth Eichmann. Thank you, Elizabeth. I know you're listening. newspaper clippings. But Amanda's absolutely right. The things that are the real close to heart stories that are going to pull on you when you hear them today are things that we hear just a little snippet about. Oh, this, I think this happened. I don't really know the details. That's that breadcrumb that sends us down and to learn about something that's not very well published.
What about things that you two have learned? Obviously, you're knowledgeable about the city and its history. What are some of the things that surprised you? I'll start with you, Audra, that surprised you in developing this tour?
Surprised me.
Yeah, things that you didn't know that really kind of jumped out at you.
Since I've been leaning more towards the side of what were the disasters that led to changes in the built environment. It's kind of unfortunate for me because I've read the code, so I know the end of the story already. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that's very particularly surprising about what we have today as far as building codes go.
Talk about bridges.
Oh, but bridges. That's right. I guess that is a good point. The more I learn about the Eads Bridge, the more incredible it is because of how. It's just a guy that just figured it out. It's not the first time in history. And the same thing goes for the dome of the old cathedral, Eads Bridge, and the age-old precedent in Italy. If you want me to talk about not St. Louis, I'll talk about Brunelleschi. But all of these were examples of people who were not formally trained in the way that we expect people to be formally trained now. And they have to prove to the citizens of the community what they built works through various feats of strength and, you know, in the case of the Eads Bridge, elephants and locomotives and all this. And as it turns out, these things are some of the strongest things that we have in our infrastructure. The Eads Bridge particularly withstood every one of these major events, particularly the tornadoes. The part that failed was actually the more of the stone part and not the part that's spanning the river. I think that's incredible. That's always exciting
to
me.
We were studying and writing this. She kept coming to me with bridge disasters. And did you know that 8 people died on this bridge?
Oh, that's right. Oh, the bridge in St. Charles. That's right. There's one bridge in St. Charles that had 3 run-ins with disasters, and that stupid thing still stood up. Can't believe
Is it still there?
It's not anymore. Yeah.
We had a guest on yesterday. We were talking about the French colonial period. One thing led to another. And the guest was telling the story of a German who came over here solely to make rivets for the construction of the Eads Bridge. So 3,000, 4,000 miles just to make rivets.
Wow.
It struck me as most unusual. But he did it, and the bridge is still there, isn't it?
Yes.
All right. How about flooding? Flooding part of your story?
It's actually the one thing that kind of doesn't make it on. I can admit publicly that flooding's kind of the one that we talked about in the 1993 flood sometime. Mm-hmm. On the bus tour, we will be visiting South St. Louis and areas that were affected on the River de Pere. We talk about how the River de Pere was diverted because of the flood. It was never, you know, disasters on a scale of, you know, killing thousands and thousands of people, but it was a nuisance flooding, and it led to, you know, illness and that kind of stuff, and how they diverted it, and
well, it actually became a river, as I recall, in 1993, and that flood, River de Pere, which is little more than a trickle most of the time. Actually, we have a couple of calls. Let's bring in Bruce. He's calling from Arnold. Bruce, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'm calling. I have on YouTube some 1890s cylinder records. These are recorded in the 1890s. And they deal with St. Louis. One is with the Eugene Field House. Another one is with horse-drawn fire engines. And then there's one on the Koch Mastodon site where Albrecht Koch had a mastodon display set up near where the arch is before the Civil War. Anyway, they're on. You can actually hear them on YouTube using Stinchcomb phonographic. That's phonographic, not pornographic, but that's the 90s term for the phonograph. Stinchcomb phonographic, and there'll be a whole series of these recordings show up that are recorded in the 1890s, and a number of them have to do with St. Louis. Really interesting stuff and really very little known to most people.
Bruce, thank you so much for the call. Well, this is interesting, not technology you can take advantage of, I don't guess, on your tools.
Yeah, and I would further on that, if people go to the New Library of Congress and the New York Public Library and search St. Louis, if you follow down rabbit holes on either of those sites, they have, I'm forgetting right now, the name for the little, it's like the double images that, it's like a little binoculars-looking thing.
They use it during
the World's Fair. They're popular. If you go to the History Museum, you'll see them. But there's a huge collection donated of St. Louis, and it's as close as you can get to seeing video of, you know, 150 years ago in St. Louis.
And they're like 3D images almost.
Yeah, it's really amazing
stuff. We had them in school, and I can't remember what the name was.
The word coming to my mind is daguerreotype, but that's not it. That's the mirror. That's not it at all, but that's the only thing that's coming to mind.
Do you use any sound on your tours on the buses, for instance? Do you have any accompanying sound that would be useful to you in any way?
No, we don't. Although now I think we should add like a track of people screaming or something.
just go to some applause
when we say something smart. Laughter,
some
we're funny.
Horror movies, perhaps.
Yeah.
Another call here. Philip joins us from St. Louis. Go ahead, Philip. You're on the air.
Hello. I was wondering about the name of the road, Natural Bridge. So I did a little research to try to find out why it was named that, and I heard that there was a limestone bridge right down in the city area, not too far from Sullivan and 14th Street, and that water ran through there, but they had to, what they said in the article was they destroyed it because of people was getting sick and I guess cholera, things like that. And I went to that site and I'm looking around and it looks like it's still humped up there. When they say destroyed it, do they mean they just covered it up and it's still under the ground there?
Thanks for the call. I'm not sure we know. Do you?
I don't know, but I'm really intrigued to find out. That's a really great point.
This question comes up from time to time, and I've never heard a really good answer as to why that name came into being. One can conjecture, I guess, about it, but anyway. Let's talk for a moment about storms as time begins to get away from us here. The cyclone of, I guess it was 97, was that right, 1897, or that period? That was a devastating storm.
Yeah, the 1890 cyclone was
1890.
Yeah, it's one of the deadliest tornadoes in American history. Mm-hmm. St. Louis as a metropolitan area has been hit by tornadoes more than any other American city. If you Google this, I mean, there's an entire Wikipedia page just for death counts of all the different major tornadoes. But that one is called a cyclone.
That one's all the way up there. It was recorded at an F4 on the scale, which only goes up to F5. Some people say it goes up to F6, but that's going to be in the neighborhood of 200 mile an hour winds. You don't see those every day. Yeah. We didn't see another one until the mid-20s in St. Louis.
Well, there was one in the 50s that bounced around the city, and it knocked off the tower of Channel 2, you'll recall, and that part of that tower remained for many years thereafter. What sort of a storm was that, and is that part of your itinerary?
They all three are. The 1921 is really my favorite. That's a weird thing to say.
It was the most fun. Right?
It's intriguing because there are actual interviews of people that were in that 1927 tornado. It hit the path that it followed. It actually hit 7 schools, and right after lunchtime, when kids were just getting back to their seats after lunch, it's some really interesting stories. And those people were then recorded. Their interviews were recorded, and so you can actually listen to people talk about the sound and what it was like for these brick school buildings to come down.
Can you cover all of the things that we've talked about in 2 hours, or do you have separate tours for separate groupings of
tragedies? Cover it. We can do it.
We
can cover it because we're so good at connecting all these things and why, you know, how they connect and those. Therefore,
But this is definitely a bus tour. It's not a walking tour.
No, we actually do it as both.
Oh, you do?
We have a walking tour of downtown. We're actually doing one next Wednesday at 6 o'clock. Mm-hmm. It's downtown disasters and catastrophes. And then we have a bus tour that's the whole damn city that goes out even further, and that one discusses, you know, mining accidents, and so the mining communities,
circus accidents,
circus derailments. That's my favorite.
Is there a worst catastrophe or tragedy in this whole thing?
Ooh,
yes.
If so, what would it be?
I'm going to go ahead and say worst as far as overall damage, emotional toll, I think it's the 1896 tornado, as far as just general number of people displaced, injured, killed, and just the emotional toll it took. I keep reading these accounts of people looking out their windows, particularly around the Lafayette Square area, and just crying because this beautiful park that they lived with their entire lives, these trees, these people in their mid-50s looking out and saying, I will never see this again as it was. Because obviously the trees won't grow back quick enough. And tornadoes are just devastating in that way. They shift the entire landscape in a way very few other things can in a swath that's bigger than almost anything can, quicker than anything else can.
And in my opinion, the worst one is the earthquake that hasn't happened yet.
Uh-huh. Oh, gosh.
So that's mine. Yeah.
Well, I'd go with the cholera epidemic. Say 6,000 dead sounds
true.
Pretty bad to me.
And it's a bad way to go.
By the way, the producers have just sent me a thing here on the computer in saying that the stereoscope is the name of the device.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right. Okay, how can people get involved in your tours? If folks are so interested with what they've heard today, they'd like to take one, what can they do?
Yeah, then go to renegadestl.com, and there's a little button that says tour with us, and that'll have our tour calendar. And then, yeah, if they want to go, the next Whole Damn City Disasters and Catastrophes bus tour is July 23rd. So if they go on our website, follow the tour links, they can buy a ticket.
Okay, and we'll put all that information on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Where you have a central place where you gather to start all of this?
The walking tours gather in City Garden. The bus tours always gather at STL Style House. Well, we're really thankful for Jeff and Randy's support at the Style House. They give us a little home to start with.
And other specific tours you have downtown or in your
Yeah,
bag.
We do. Every Friday and Saturday, we do a downtown architecture extravaganza. Which is just a general, you know, architecture and history tour of downtown St. Louis. It's a really good, just general history of the city. That's
and what is highlighted there, Adriana, the architect?
We talk about the athletic club just a little bit. Depends on how walkable everyone is. There's two ways of doing it. We talk about the athletic club. We talk about the ballpark Hilton. We obviously don't miss the Wainwright. We talk
and
about
the
old post office. We don't miss the arch. A little bit of social history, but I'm not going to lie, I definitely dive into the architecture.
Yeah. Are your guests generally inquisitive? They have a lot of questions?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Very.
Yes. Very. I had a group of 26 last week, and it was questions the whole time from everyone.
That's what you want.
Which we love. Great.
That's what makes it interesting. Well, I want to thank you both for being with us once again, talking about the Disaster and Catastrophes Tour put on by Renegade STL. My guests in studio, Amanda Clark and Adriana Peroni of Renegade STL. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.